morning. Good evening. This is Gail Sylvia, your host of SylviaGlobal.com, and today we land in India. We'll have a wonderful conversation with the founding executive director of Nirnaya. Her name is Indira Jinnah. Indira, are you with me?
Absolutely. Yes.
Hello. How are you today?
Hello. I'm fine. Thank you, Gail.
Thank you so very much for joining us on SylviaGlobal.com. This conversation will be available on SylviaGlobal.com. You can also find it on Facebook/SylviaGlobal and iTunes under podcast. Just enter Sylvia Global. Indira, thank you so much for being here with us. I want to let our audience know that you founded this organization 14 years ago, and that you are an economist with 20 years' experience in the women's movement, that you specialize in networking women employees in rural, grassroots NGOs, and providing training on project management and monitoring. You are also the author of Her Story, a book of the role of women in the Indian independence struggle. Your vision for Nirnaya, which means decision, is to make the decision to recenter women who are marginalized economically and socially and have them become equal partners alongside men in all spheres of life. Did I miss anything?
No, absolutely nothing.
Can you tell us?
You said it so good. Yes.
Can you please share with us what prompted your decision and your move to found this organization 14 years ago?
Well, you gave my introduction as an economist. Yes, I have been an outstanding economist and, you know, sort of went into that particular strain. But as a woman, I found that the going was tough. And, you know, with my marriage, I realized that I had sunk everything. And I had become invisible. And this was sort of somehow, it was churning within me. And I said, no, this is not what I'm made for. This is not what I can do. And believe me, at that point of time, I mean, like, having worked in, you know, got into a public sector bank in a top ranking position, which, you know, very few women get into, I had reached a stage where I did not know where I would go, what I would do if I had to step out of my marital house. I literally went to the level of thinking, okay, I can't go back to my parents' house, and I don't have anything. I've lost the job, I have lost a lot of time, and I said, what do I do? The one thing probably I'm good at is, you know, maybe washing dishes. So maybe I can go as a housemaid there. So just imagine from being called the cream of the cream of society by the banking sector when I was appointed to come to the level where, you know, I feel that I'm absolutely nothing. With all my caste, my class, and my academic qualifications and levels, that said, no, I have to do something. That is when I joined the women's movement.
How did you emotionally work through that process of evaluating your circumstances and how you arrived at that moment in time and your circumstances that you were faced with? How did you emotionally do that? Were you just spent a lot of time
I was very lucky because while I did have all these anxieties, I did have, you know, a family of parents and sisters who just sort of said, no, you know, come here and be with us. And I literally went back to starting with a, you know, on a job where I was earning 150 rupees per month. And that was, it's not even existent now, the letterpress printing. You know, those that you have those little blocks and that you keep composing. You see, that is the work I had to do with a master's in economics, the first class master's in economics. And the fortune, good fortune I had was the women's movement was, you know, sort of the just coming up at that time. And I fell into this because I said, okay, there are so many other women with so many other issues and challenges, and that somehow was the cushion. I think I was very fortunate to have that kind of cushioning.
You came to an awareness, though, that you were made to do something more, that your life was not to be limited. What do you think prevents? Do you think that all women, who, especially the women that you're working with and that you encounter, at some point they come to this type of realization and they either acknowledge it and move forward as you did in pursuit of it, or they resign themselves to a lesser position and lower self-esteem?
No, I wouldn't say that it's not something that happens that easily, because there are different levels of people. People who have the privilege of education and, you know, slightly better economic standards do come into this more easily. I mean, they see that, you know, they need the spaces and they need to blossom out. But what, you know, at that point of time, when I was thinking, looking at all this, I said, with all these privileges, this is what I have felt and this is what I have been having to go through. What is it for women who are, you know, discriminated by their caste, by their class, that is their economic status, where, you know, even getting a meal is so difficult. And okay, for me it was not physical abuse, but it was more, you know, sort of verbal abuse, which even that I couldn't tolerate. But physical abuse is something that is, you know, like, okay, if my husband doesn't hit me or my father doesn't hit me, who's going to hit me, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something, that is the situation that is there. And these women, for these women for whom survival itself is such a big challenge. It is, I mean, they don't know what they're going to see tomorrow, merely because they don't have the food.
It's interesting how around the world one of the things that we have in common is that there are those of us who have options, and then there are those that don't see or have options, and they just do what needs to be done to press on and to survive. So a lot of the women that it sounds like that you're working with, they don't have many options, and survival is a very basic, very fundamental, day-to-day part of how they exist and take care of their children. Is that accurate?
That is, to some extent. That is, the first priority for them is survival. So what we, you know, would do is, what we have been doing is, we don't straight away go into addressing issues of violence. We go into, you know, we, and also we don't, as Nirmaya, we do not lay down rules or dictate, these are the things that, you know, you can take and work on. We, you know, leave it to the community women or the women's NGOs who seek our support to decide what is it that, you know, they find is most suited for them to empower the women among whom they are working. And we are primarily supporting women's NGOs and individual women with fellowships and small grants for working among the most deprived and the most marginalized. Believe me, you just have to see it to believe it, because they are women who say, yes, where do I get food for my family? Where do I get food for myself? But once you know, the livelihood issue gets addressed through either providing some means of microcredit or, you know, linking them up with government agencies or linking them up with banks to get some kind of credit to start off their work. From there, you know, with addressing livelihood, these women start thinking about a lot of things, because then once they start earning, then they say, okay, so this is what I am earning. I have a say in what can be done in this house or not, without our having to, you know, even guide them to it. These women start asking questions.
It's wonderful. It's beautiful. Can you tell us how many women you serve in these capacities?
We are supporting groups in 5 states of India, in Andhra Pradesh, Orissa, Chhattisgarh, Jharkhand, and Tamil Nadu. And we support women living with HIV and commercial sex workers, the tribal women, and the Dalit women, and the Muslim minority women. Very, very vulnerable section. And totally, I would say that if we take it from the last year to this year, it would be around, we would have touched around the lives of about 15,000 women.
What ages are they generally, and how many children do they have on average?
The women are, interestingly, the women in the past 4 years, the age group is from 27 to 35. When we started, it used to be women who were 40 and above.
Mm.
But we are seeing younger women coming, which is a very rare phenomenon. One, it is good. But the other point also is that they are being victimized so much that, you know, they are coming out much earlier.
So they're not suffering alone.
Yes.
For a long time.
Because there is a lot of migration. You know, in the past 4 years, there is a phenomenal amount of migration across states. And it starts with the men moving out. And when the men move out, the women are there alone. And the men migrate, they do not send back any money. They only go and set up another house with another woman.
Hmm.
And this woman is left with at least about 3 children.
Are the children?
She has to fend for herself.
She has to fend for herself. Are the children
in
school?
She has to fend. No, I mean, like, not really all of them send their children to school. And they're really tiny. So what we help these NGOs do is link up with the government, the local government bodies, so that it is possible for the, you know, for them to get the government child care centers to run effectively. So while these women are working, the children who have to be in the child care center can be there and get the government schools working properly, so that children who are at school-going age can go there, and these women can, you know, therefore be free to go and earn a living.
Is work, this type of work, supported by some men? Are there men who support this type of work, I should say?
See, what we, you know, what we are doing is, what we have seen in our own experience is that not supported in that sense. I mean, the depth and going through the various strands of the challenges, that is not really done. It is not even understood, because there is a lot taken for granted that, okay, I mean, you can change this much, but not more than that. That is the attitude.
Mm.
But we are getting the youth. We are getting the youth, the young men, to get involved in this. Because we realize that it has to be true. You can't work only with women.
Mm-hmm.
So now these NGOs are starting to work with the young men also.
And how are they responding?
Yes, they are responding. They are responding.
How do they respond?
I would say one, at least they come and sit at meetings and listen. Listen seriously, not smoking, not making fun, but listening seriously. And then there are older men who come and disturb meetings, you know, like sitting around there and trying to pass comments or, you know, interrupt the meeting. These young men kick them out. They ensure that it goes on smoothly. And also the other, there is one very difficult situation in which all our grantee partners work. And that is that one side, on the one side we have the government, and on the other side there is a very, very strong left group movement. And so these, our partner groups have to, you know, sort of work with both in one sense. They have to ensure that they do not antagonize the left movement person groups, and also they do not get blacklisted by the government. It's a very, very tricky and dangerous situation in which they are working. And I would say that all of us, you know, sort of somewhere, sometimes we just feel that our hearts are in our mouths because we just don't know what is happening. We read some news or see some news on the television and immediately we call up the partner organization located around that place and ask, look, how are you? Are things okay?
Mm-hmm. Are you, it's
difficult. Yeah.
Do you ever feel threatened? Or have you been threatened for the work that you're doing?
Yes, I mean, like, threatened in the sense, there are some times, you know, when, for example, when we go, whether I go or anybody else, I tend to speak out a little more forthrightly. I think probably I just say, okay, take advantage of my age a little bit and take a little more, be a bit more forthright. But for all of us, it is a difficult situation because when we go into some of these interior places, it's like we really kiss our lives goodbye and go. We don't know whether we're going to come back alive or not.
Have you lost anyone in your own 14 years?
Mm-hmm. Not in our organization, but our grantee partners, yes. It's been terrible. It's been really terrible.
What can listeners do to support your work, India?
Listeners can support our work in so many ways. They could get more information. They could provide resources. And there are so many kinds of resources that can be provided. And I think first, get to know our organization, get to know where we are working, and see, you know, what best way it's possible, because it's a difficult path that we are treading, but we need that kind of support. And I would really say that whoever invests in women, invests in Ismaya, definitely is investing where it goes to the right place. I mean, like, it just doesn't go wrong. That much we can assure everybody about. And then, you know, like, maybe volunteers, it may not be an ideal time to send volunteers into areas like this. We would really hesitate to take on any volunteers now to send into inferior places because it's risky for anyone to go to such places. But otherwise, we would say that be it in resources in kind, resources in by way of finances, resources by way of, you know, showing us different technology which works, you know, which is applicable to us. With, okay, I'm just skipping to WFN a little bit.
Okay.
Women Funding Network, is that okay?
Yes, please. Yeah. We're going to talk about the, yes, the affiliation and what it means to be a Women's Funding Network affiliate. Yes.
I would say that, you know, like being part of Women's Funding Network is a growth for us. And I think that the two evaluation tools that the WFN has brought out, that is, how do we, you know, the smart growth tool and how do we grow smartly and making the case, how do we make our case, how do we tell our story, and that we had to really, you know, we had to adapt it, we had to almost reinvent the whole thing for it to be possible for illiterate women to understand and use it. It is not women who, you know, are technology savvy, who can sit and just punch a few keys and, you know, get it. We are all the time dealing with illiterate women, women who are talking a different language. For example, if it is tribal women, there will be the WNGO, the Women's Non-Governmental Organization, which has tribal women who speak Hindi, which is an Indian language, and also the tribal language. So it will be from either we speak Hindi, and then from Hindi it is translated into the tribal language, and, you know, in the reverse. So you can imagine the number of steps one has to go through. But we managed to go through it by simplifying it. And that has helped us in, you know, building up the capacities of the women's NGOs also. They saw the importance of, you know, including the stakeholders, that is the community women among whom they work, in every step of the projects that we support.
Explain to the listener how you partner with WFN, how that was initiated. You know, you just talked about the current partnership and the tools, one tool that's provided. How did that connection happen?
Well, I would say that the first time when one of our co-founders went to this Women's Funding Network conference, she was so thrown by the whole thing. I mean, she said, is it okay if I'm quite frank?
Please go ahead.
Yes. You know, she was so thrown by the fact of, you know, it being so white and so high class. And she said, I don't know. I mean, like, she came back and she said, I don't know. I just didn't know what to say because I felt like nothing. So then at that point of time, we said, no, but we still need to go. I mean, wherever, even though we feel uncomfortable, we have to go. And, you know, we have always been going for these conferences. And even when the membership fee had to be paid, we said we can't pay the membership fee of something like $1,000 because we can put it to so much use in our country.
Yeah.
Where can we pay? And, you know, Chris Graham was the executive director then. He said, okay, pay $1,000 of your currency. Now, $1,000 of our currency was fine. There was no problem about that. But I think while we kept on you know, from different parts of the world, when we were getting included into this network, and we shared our concerns and our work and our experiences. I think also there has been that space creation, and also I think confidence among us also within ourselves that yes, this is legitimate, this makes sense, and you know, like everyone learns, and I think that learning is something that really helped us. And then when this tool was brought up, that is when it's always difficult to evaluate women's work. How are women empowered? What is the example of an empowered woman? How many women have got empowered? We can talk about how many taps have been fitted and how many houses have been built and things like that, or how many schools set up. But, you know, how have women got empowered? How have they been able to advance their rights? It's very difficult for us. Even now we are grappling to find ways to measure this and ways to convince people and that, yes, this is this change that we have been able to bring about. And there, I think, helping us to with yet another tool is what the Women's Funding Network has done. And that has been very helpful, definitely.
What additional support would you like to see coming from the Women's Funding Network? Or additional tools?
I would feel really that the Women's Funding Network is concerned, if it is really possible for, you know, creating some space where some of our women's NGOs and also some, a very small cross-section at least of the community women whom our grantee partners are working with, if that can be somewhere, you know, sort of put across at, you know, with either at a conference or at a separate meeting where some of the other members of the Women's Funding Network are also able to, you know, sort of be there and see, that is maybe the group for the women that they support and the groups or the women that we support, you know, have something a little beyond what we are. We are at a level where we as members are meeting annually. But when we are talking about economic power, when we are talking about advancing women's rights, and we are really thinking of going to the root and addressing the grassroots, I feel that some kind of networking needs to take place. I mean, I don't know, maybe it's just saying too much or expecting too much, but I feel that we need to move it a little bit. What we have done is that, you know, in Nidnaya, we don't see ourselves as a funder only. We see ourselves as partners in a common mission with our grantees, sharing a common mission. Similarly, we are also sharing a common mission with the Women's Funding Network. What should really logically happen is that somewhere these partnerships need to come alive.
Well, hopefully this conversation is a part of igniting that. And the information that you're sharing reveals the importance of the work that's being done at a local level and at this global level through the Women's Funding Network. And also, you're coming. You've you've continued, your organization has continued to send representatives to Women Funding Network events. You'll be here for the Summit on Economics and Peace for Women this week and contributing important messages and resources to the organization by your presence. Do you have any thoughts about your expectations of this year's gathering?
Yes, this is an expectation because when you're talking about economics and peace, then we do need to have people. I feel that at least we would have the opportunity to say that, and we need to open it up, at least start thinking about it. Because what I relate or what any other foundation representative relate about an experience at the local, at the grassroots level, will only be secondary. Yeah. It is not direct information.
Yeah.
Everyone, you know, there needs to be that kind of direct access. And I'm also worried that, you know, women need to somehow get together at all the different levels.
How do you see that happening? In what format?
In what format do I
of all the different levels, describe each of the levels very briefly that you're referring to that you want to see the connection happen.
I would say that, okay, we are members of the Women's Funding Network, and there are so many foundations, a lot of them within the U.S., a lot outside from different parts of the world also. So, okay, maybe there could be something. And Women's Funding Network and Mama Cash did this in 2005, where this evaluation tool, making the case, there was a testing of that at which some of our women's NGOs, that is the women's NGOs from the different Asian regions, had come. So from Nidnia's grantee partners also, there were three representatives.
Okay.
Okay, so that way, you know, there can be something where there are both the foundation and also the NGOs, the implementing organizations as well as the funding organizations.
Around the same.
And then, you know, sort of being, yes, you need to have that.
If there were in place a global call to action on women and girls, what would be an important part of that action piece?
Sorry?
If there were a discussion about a global call to action for women and girls, how would you define that action? What would that action be to a global call to action for women and girls? Would it be to raise awareness around the world about the work that's being done for women and girls and to highlight that? Or would it be to put governmental policies in place or a combination of that and other factors?
No, it would be a combination of bringing about the awareness and also working with the government machinery, because the government is, as far as the Indian government is concerned, definitely there is the interest about, you know, sort of addressing issues of issues affecting women and girls, and the importance of addressing this for the future cannot be denied, and it cannot be pushed aside either. So this would be a time when that kind of a call takes place. I mean, where in all our work, I mean, we all of us, there are so many of us working with women and girls, and we should be able to bring from the local level a representation of women and girls who will be able to talk about what it is that they find are issues affecting them, and how are they tackling them, and how do they think they need to tackle, what is it that they feel as deliverables from the government, from other, you know, sort of global initiatives. I think that needs to happen. That needs to come really from, really from the very primary grassroots level. Beyond the urban, beyond the higher rural, to really the primary grassroots level. That kind of an involvement needs to take place.
And that type of involvement is a part of what it would enhance that decision-making capability of women to get better control over their own lives and for the a life of dignity that was one of the visions that you had for starting Linnea. In closing, in your wildest dream, how will history be changed because of your passion and the work that you're doing?
In my wildest dream, I would say that there are some changes, and I would think about all these women, the Irula tribal women, the Adivasis from Jharkhand and Chhattisgarh and Odisha and Tamil Nadu, wherever it is that we have reached out, all these women and girls, they have the passion and they have the enthusiasm. They should just come and be able to storm into absolutely every sphere of life. And, you know, just not just making their presence felt. They just break these bastions. They break it and build sustainable communities. They can do it.
They can do it. Indira,
yes,
Jenna, Executive Director of Linnea, talking to us today from, tell us the name of the city again that you're in India.
I am in Hyderabad.
Hyderabad. And how would our listeners get in touch with you? Your email, is there a website address?
There is www.info@linnea.org.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I look forward to meeting you at the upcoming Women's Funding Network Summit here in Los Angeles, California, and so glad that you're coming back and that your voice and your passion and your vision are part of the mission of helping women and girls. Thank you so much, Indira.
Thank you so much.